You're listening to Leadership Powered by Common Sense with your host, Doug Thorpe. Here's Doug.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to another episode of Leadership Powered by Common Sense. I am your host, Doug Thorpe, and today I have Dr. Irene Kopp with me. I met Irene online, and we had a very wonderful discussion about the whole body of work on developing leaders in our business community today. And we're going to dive further into that. So first, let me say, Irene, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me here, Doug.
And you're calling in from where?
Croatia right now, near Split, Croatia.
My goodness. Wonderful. Well, thank you for taking the time to do that. How are things in that part of the world right now?
Lovely, beautiful, sunny, peaceful, if you're referring to the Ukraine.
Yeah. Good. I always like to keep tabs on my friends and colleagues in other parts of the world that may or may not be influenced by other events going on. But anyway, Irene, I always like to start asking guests to kind of give us a recap of the journey that you've been on personally in your business life and career life to kind of get you to the place that you are right now. Could you give us a recap of that?
Absolutely. I'd love to. So unlike perhaps many of your listeners, I have been self-employed almost my entire adult life as a doctor. And the reality is doctors are entrepreneurs, they're business people, they have staff, they have team members, and so therefore they are leaders. And my own personal journey is that I started as a doctor of chiropractic. How many years ago now? Almost 29 years ago. And I had it all going on. I was hopping, right? I had my clinic with, you know, multiple front staff and other doctors and massage therapists and acupuncturists and naturopaths. And I was like head of, like, you know, we call them business improvement associations. I ran a yearly festival in Toronto, Ontario. I was on the PTA, the board of directors of the PTA, and I was a single mom. And so, and I was like, got it all going on. And until I didn't. And I hit the wall. I crashed and burned, literally. And by losing consciousness, and I drove straight into a massive rock face in northern Canada. Now, I broke 10 bones, and that was bad enough. What was worse is that my two young sons were in the car with me. So my six-year-old had PTSD from witnessing what had, you know, a scene that had adults throwing up. And my four-year-old son suffered a catastrophic brain injury, and he needed to be airlifted 3 hours south to hospital for sick children in Canada, in Toronto, and undergo emergency life-saving surgery. And they didn't know if he was going to live for even like 3 weeks. And then once he seemed out of the woods with that, the prognosis from top neurosurgeons, like tops in the world, said, he's never going to walk again. He's never going to talk again. And he's not going to pass high school, you know, except as, you know, that special needs type passing high school. So this is what I was faced with. And it was during the first SARS, COVID is a SARS. So the first SARS was 19, and that actually happened. That car accident was 19 years ago today.
Oh my.
And yeah. And so I just noticed that on the calendar today. And so here I was, all alone, in one hospital because I was on quarantine, couldn't have any visitors. So I truly, truly, my heart goes out to anyone who experienced that over the past couple of years. I understand completely. And I was the only person, patient in the whole hospital on complete bed rest because literally 10 broken bones, including my neck, my back, both sides, my pelvis, blah, 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 blah. And so I was stuck lying flat in my hospital bed all alone in this hospital room. And I was literally spiraling down, And the pain, the physical pain, that was nothing compared to the mental and emotional pain. Okay, let's call a spade a spade. The shame, the guilt, the remorse that I felt, that what kind of doctor was I not to have known I was burned out and developed this physical condition? What kind of mother was I to have almost killed my young sons? And really, it was like, do I even deserve to live? Like my inner judge and jury, you know, they tried and convicted me. I was like, no, you don't. You know, you don't deserve to help people because you couldn't help yourself. You don't deserve to be a mother because you almost killed them. Mm. And then the fear, right? I couldn't see my kids. My other son was in a completely different hospital. I couldn't see him, couldn't see my little six-year-old. And so it was just like this massive perfect storm. And I was just being sucked down in this, think of like a tornado, just sucking me down. I reached like that lowest point in my life. And I remember vividly lying in that hospital bed and I'll add self-pity in there, bawling my eyes out, crying, like, why me? Why me? And it wasn't just, it was why me, as in the farmer in me says self-pity. The other part of the why me was, why me? I was a doctor. I specialized in lifestyle medicine. I ate right. I exercised. I've been a meditation instructor for longer than I was a doctor. I did yoga. I got as much sleep as any parent with two young sons could. Why me? How did this happen to me? And what I recognized was that, and what I now teach is that we're designed for success. All of us are born geniuses with our own unique sets of gifts and talents. And we're already valuable. We're already worthy. You could say we're already successful. And at the same time, we're set up for failure because of the programming that's instilled in us by well-meaning people who are broken themselves because they were programmed, as well as the trauma and the life-changing events that scar us and stress us. And it literally sets us up for failure because we only have... In traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine, they talk about your life, your qi, your life energy, that you only have so much. And if you drain it, think of like, you know, a bucket with a hole in it, right? You could be filling it up as much as possible with like all the best food, the best sleep, the best everything. But if it's constantly draining out, then you're not going to have anything left when push comes to shove, right? There's no wiggle room. And so in that moment, I decided to give myself the grace and understand that I wasn't some monster, that I was an unfortunate statistic, just like millions of other people. And you could say now, after the last couple of years, billions. And that it was, and that burnout is something that is also expected by society. Like literally, it's like we're treated like an expendable commodity. and that we are trained through our programming and through societal expectations to give until we're bled dry.
Yeah.
That we have to achieve to prove that we're worthy. And so I'd love to say that that made everything right. What I did decide that day was that if I could help one family, one person avoid suffering what my family and I did, then I would be successful. The reality is that was just the start. That gave me hope. That gave me my big why, my big purpose, my ikigai, however you choose to call it. And then from there, it was the uphill battle, helping my son rehabilitate against all odds, helping my family rehabilitate. And so I did everything that was needed. I went searching for the answers, invested hundreds of thousands of dollars, going back to medical school, multiple coaching certifications, became certified in brain injury and neuroplasticity so that I could help my son in the best way possible. And I'll fast forward and say, he's doing awesome, by the way. He walks, talks, and in his fourth year of engineering. And my other son's doing awesome. So it has a happy ending. I didn't want to leave your listeners hanging. The most important thing, and the reason why I brought all this up, is that after years of searching and finding those answers and helping my family heal against all odds, I recognize that the very things that set me up for failure are the very things that block. You and I were talking in the green room, Doug, about blockages. What blocks people from expanding into that highest version of themselves, whether it's in, going for a career advancement or perhaps starting their own company, like whatever that success block looks like. It has its roots in the very same things that set me up for failure. And that is that it's our programming. It's all of that coalesced down. Yeah. And so that is now what I work with people on. I got and organizations.
Well, quite a story, Irene, and thank goodness that you are where you are today and that the boys are fine and have moved on and are, you know, leading their own seemingly successful lives and taking all the new chapters that are going to come their way. So I'm thankful for that. I do want to shift to this idea of the blockages, because I certainly see it in my coaching work when I start with individuals who are in positions of responsibility. They've taken on a senior management title, or maybe they've created a company. They're entrepreneurs that are venturing independently. But inevitably, there's a kind of blockage one way or another that is keeping them from that realization of that high potential they probably do have and will have. So I would like to talk about some of those blockage type areas. You hit a big one that I think is ever present in many people's lives. The whole idea of what you've been conditioned to believe, or the story that gets played in your mind's eye. My wife calls it the tape that plays in your head.
Smart wife.
I'll digress a bit. I'll tell a story. It's not nearly as significant or impactful, but it goes to the building of one of those blockages. When I was in graduate school getting my MBA, I was at a university that required the trifecta to get out and get your degree conferred. You had to take a comprehensive exam at the end of the program. You had to sit for orals, and you had to write a thesis. So It was the three bang to get out. My comprehensive exam went well. My thesis was considered wonderful. But I set for my orals, there were three professors. Because this was a business school, one of the professors happened to be a specialist in the world of finance. And as we went through the panel, he deemed that I did not answer any of his questions sufficiently. And through a very long story that I'll make very short, my degree was conferred, but he put a caveat on it. He told me he would vote to confer my degree if I would agree and pledge to him personally that I would never take a job in the U.S. banking system. And I thought, that's ridiculous. You know, that's what kind of parameter, and who are you to dictate to me what I can and can't do? And being a young 20-something, I just, oh, sure, whatever. I'll agree to that. No problem. And knowing that there was no, you know, legal binding to do that. But the point is, it planted a seed. It planted this giant seed of doubt. Well, I was still in the military at the time, so I still had a couple more years to finish out that commitment. Sure enough, as things turned out, when I got out of service and started looking for a civilian job, one of the best opportunities I was given was to go to work at a regional bank. And that was through a series of connections with some old college acquaintances. I took the job not thinking a whole lot about what that professor had made me pledge to do. And again, long story short, I worked 20 years at that bank, and subsequently, in a season of time after that, I actually did some major consulting work with the U.S. FDIC, our Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, that's kind of in the backbone of the banking system. So suffice it to say, I had a very successful career in banking, despite what this finance prof wanted to put in me. But every now and then, there would be something that happened, and I would flash back to that guy sitting there telling me I was not worthy, I was not adequate, I was not sufficient to be part of that system. And it took work to get past that.
Absolutely. And thank you for sharing that. That's a perfect example of one of the blocks. And one of the blocks is fear.
Yeah.
Right. And that fear can develop in a number of different ways. Let me back up, actually. I want to talk about the number of different ways. That is what we call a transformational life event, a significant emotional event. And they can be positive, they can be negative. And it's one of those in a moment type massive shifts that set a new tone for you. You could almost say change your identity, because and I'll give examples of good and well, negative and positive. Getting married could be called one. Anybody who's had a child, mother or father, will know that you go from being this person that's by yourself and you're responsible for yourself to, I am now a mom, I am now a dad, and I'd give my life for this, right? That's a transformational event. When you have someone that you respect highly because they are an expert in their field, and they tell you that, whether he just didn't have a good coffee that day, or maybe, just maybe, he felt the need to bully you because, and I'm going to draw some ire for this, and I don't care, lovingly I say that, bullies and victims are two sides of the same coin. In other words, the only difference between a victim and a bully is that the victim goes into hiding, goes into mouse mode, and the bully goes into rat or aggressive mode, and they're both lacking self-esteem. So it doesn't matter how expert they are. Frankly, for him to have to say that to you, I think personally, I think he had major issues. All that being said, here is this young man who has worked so hard to be told that, and the fear attached in that moment, like, am I even going to get my degree that I've tried so hard? you know, maybe I am a failure, right? So as you say, it planted a seed. Thank goodness you had time. You know, you were still in the military. You were still able to work through. The fact that you keep flashing back to that says that it impacted you in a way of, and always calling into question, maybe he's right. Maybe he's right. And who knows how that may have stopped you from progressing. Like, you had a successful career, and what could you have possibly done if he had been more supportive? And you didn't have that, because each of those transformational life events scars you a little bit and drains your energy unless you take steps to correct it and to release them. And the other part of that is one of the biggest fears out of the five major fears is the fear of rejection. And fear of rejection is also fear of, like, humiliation, embarrassment. That's why for most people, they say that public speaking is a fate worse than death, right? Because they're more afraid of being rejected than they are of dying.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you had that worst thing happen to you. So that, again, that fear response of, well, I don't dare do this, even unconsciously, because I may happen again, and it may happen worse. Does that make sense?
Yeah. 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 In my case, what I'll share is that I had the great good fortune, as I was growing up, my mother, who, as many of my listeners have probably already heard me say, I grew up the only child of a single working mom. She had the great foresight to surround me with mentors that just built these walls of strength and knowledge and confidence about who I could be. So his one comment in grad school was but a kind of a rock against a wall of
good.
The wall of, like I said, confidence and belief and faith in the potential. So I took the job in banking, not ever really thinking about him until after it had happened. I was secured and reporting for work. And then I was driving to work one day, and I really do remember having that flashback to that moment. And all I did was laugh. I thought, no, what an idiot, you know, what an idiot he was for daring to challenge this. And, you know, it was easy to make a commitment to subsequently prove him wrong but maybe to your point, it's ironic that I even thought I needed or wanted to do that, because it was stuck. It was a kind of a scar that was definitely present, but it's you know, just one of many life stories, right? And, you know, on that, Irene, I want to take a quick commercial break in the show here, and we'll come back. I would like to talk a little more about these fears that people can have, because as we find ways to overcome those fears, that's when we can really unlock that tremendous potential that might be laying there dormant. So we'll get into that right after this break.
Business is all about solving complex problems as fast as you can create them. Become the best problem solver by leading others to greatness too. And the first step is going to DougThorpe.com. Doug Thorpe is known globally for coaching entrepreneurs and business leaders, improving their performance and the work output of everyone surrounding them. You can find health, wealth, and happiness by learning to lead others to health, wealth, and happiness. Go to DougThorpe.com now and order Doug's books or hire him to coach your managers. That's Doug, T-H-O-R-P-E.com.
All right, everyone. Hi, we're back. I'm talking with Dr. Irene Kopp. We're talking about possible stumbling blocks or hindrances to your growth as a leader in whatever situation you might be in. And while we were kind of on break in the green room, we were talking about, she alluded in the first half of the show to these five fears that people may have. So, Irene, could you kind of elaborate? What are those areas that people struggle in?
I would love to, because they really are so important, Doug. So the five fears, I'm a kind of a word geek, so I made it the five D's
okay.
of fear.
I like it.
First couple make absolute sense to most people, right? Fear of death, fear of disability. The next one also makes sense when I tell people, and that is the fear of destitution, right? Having nothing, losing it all. And here's where emotions can really, truly bung us up. We can get all balled up in this, because I was working with a client today, and just as a quick aside, just because these fears came up, she's very successful doing what she's doing. So successful that her business has skyrocketed. And she's found herself putting on the brakes because all of a sudden she's got all this success and she doesn't know how to handle it. In other words, the fears are coming up, and she didn't call them fears. She goes, I just don't know what to do. Like, you know, how we talk about like email nurture sequences or this or that. She goes, I'm what I used to find so easy doing, like writing copy, I'm finding I can't do. Even to push send on an email to the email list, I can't do. It's like there's something invisible that's like stopping me. She goes, I don't get it. Right. And so the time that we spent together was, and I didn't know it was fear to start. It was like going through, okay, how does it feel? Right. How does it feel in your body? Right. She goes, I don't know what emotion. I don't know what emotion I'm feeling. I said, fine, tell me how you're feeling in your body. And, you know, so she described like a tightness all over my body. My stomach's clenching. My chest is clenching. My heart is like, it's racing. My throat is clenching. Tears are threatening to come out my eyes. These were things, and it's confidential, I won't say who she is. And when I took her back and looked at, okay, let's go back to that most impressionable time of your life, your childhood, and see where this may be coming from. It turned out that when she was 5 years old, her father, who was an entrepreneur, declared bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. So there was like a massive financial shift that, as you know, just like dogs smelling fear, kids are very, very perceptive. Her parents tried to hide it, racked up even more debt, trying to put up appearances, right? Like it was just, so she saw all of this happening, but she's this five-year-old that is angry, right? Because when you're a child, there is no logic. The age of reason hasn't arrived. So children will decide things like at face value, like, oh, if I were a good boy, mommy and daddy wouldn't fight, or mommy wouldn't have gotten sick, or, right? Like, in other words, they take the weight of the world on themselves.
Right. Right.
And it seems right to them.
Yeah.
Right. In her case, the message that she got was, it's not safe to be successful. It's not safe to go bigger, because the higher you go, the harder you fall.
Yeah. Wow.
Right. So there is the emotional fear, where the fear of destitution can become as strong as, like, literally, like, think of olden days, right? Where if you had nothing and there were no supports, it was a death sentence. Probably a long, slow, painful suffering death.
Painful death,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that is the fear of destitution. The fourth fear is the second most powerful fear. That is that fear of rejection or desolation or desertion, if you want to use the D that I lovingly gave it, right? That is that fear of loss of love and connection. And again, your unconscious mind has no logic, right? And your unconscious mind is what runs the show 99% of the time. It's like the little man behind the curtain, you know, with his hands at the controls, like the Wizard of Oz. And so it can be totally blown out of proportion, number one. Number two, there is that hardwired primitive part of us that remembers that not so long ago in history, if we were thrown out of the tribe, again, that was a death sentence.
Right, right.
Right. And very likely, as you said, a very painful, slow death, like starving to death or something. It's also one of our six essential emotional needs, the need for love and connection. And it's one of those most powerful essential emotional needs. And if we don't meet it in a healthy way, then guaranteed we're going to meet it in an unhealthy way. All you have to do is look at people who stay in abusive relationships, for instance,
right?
Or unhappy marriages,
right?
Or even unhappy jobs, right? Because there's that connection there. Right. So in other words, that fear of desertion is so, so, so powerful. And that is that fear of humiliation, that fear of embarrassment, that fear of being rejected. And the final fear, the fifth fear, I believe, is the strongest fear of all. And it's the most challenging one for most people to understand if they think about it. And that is the death of the identity. Understanding that as I move up and become more and more successful, I'm changing. So I no longer know who I am. Right? And it sounds like, oh, that's not a problem. Well, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, to use the stereotype of, you know, star athletes that get taken out of the ghetto and you know, have millions of money, you know, dollars thrown at them. And you know, they have these fancy homes and everybody is looking up to them like, right? And then they sabotage. It's not because they're bad or stupid. The same thing with people who win the lottery. It's not that they lack willpower or they just want to throw the money away. No, it's not their identity. And you could give them all the financial advice in the world, and that's not going to do the job. There's a reason why,
yeah.
As a Canadian, you know, Sidney Crosby, I think it was Mario Lemieux, right, who was the leader of the Penguins at the time, the coach of the Penguins. When he brought on Sidney Crosby as a 17-year-old, he had Sidney live with him, right? It was so because he understood the pitfalls. I was like, no, you're living with me. I'm going to be your de facto dad, and I'm going to help you shift into this new identity, right? So the death of the identity, who would I be? Right? We think we want success, that we want more money, that we want more power, responsibility. And your unconscious mind is like going, hell no, that's dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. It is the most powerful fear.
That is interesting. And as you mentioned that, I think of entrepreneurs that I've known that did in fact become very successful and yet inevitably shot themselves in the foot over it, you know, and it wasn't so much about making bad decisions, but there were just some decisions that needed to get made that they failed to do or chose not to do. And yet for the good of the business, the decision needed to be made. And without it, it began to crumble. I saw this a lot in my banking days working with companies, especially the so-called mom and pop entrepreneurial ventures. They, you know, they achieve this level of success. I call it the paradox of success. The very thing you're trying to get is this growth and prosperity. And yet when you get to a certain level, you you allow it to implode, either because of certain choices you did make or choices that needed to be made that you didn't or wouldn't make, and it crumbles. So a good cautionary tale. One other thought I want to get back to on, in your spectrum of these fears, I was reminded as you were describing that in the 2008 timeframe, when here in the U.S. we had, you know, what was considered the Great Recession, we had double-digit unemployment, and I know the world was going through a similar situation. I got involved in a career transition organization. I created a group in my community to help people that were job seekers. And we had the good fortune of coaching over 4,500 people for the next, you know, a couple of year timeframe in there. But quickly, one of the things I learned that has really stuck with me in my coaching effort is there were two fears that happened, and you touched on them both. For the men, and I'm making some very broad brush generalizations here to tell this story, the men suffered the loss of that identity. When they lost their jobs, their identity went out the door, and they didn't know who they were anymore. And they were in a panic. And it wasn't about losing the paycheck that was the problem. It was about losing the identity of whatever status and title they had achieved, being given the pink slip saying, nope, you're not that anymore. They, you know, put them in that downward spiral. There was a similar but much different impact for the ladies. The ladies were fearful of the loss of security. Those that had jobs and had careers, there was a security that went with that. And so it was that safety and comfort, and it wasn't as much about the accumulation of wealth or anything, but it was just that sense of security, having that, and losing the job meant the security went out the door. So they were in a different state of loss compared to the men, who the ladies were worried about, could they put food on the table for their families? And the men were worried about, I don't know who I am. I don't know. You tell me to go stand up and get ready to look for another job. I don't know who I am anymore. I don't know what story I'm going to tell. So it was a very interesting dynamic. And inevitably, everyone that came through our program exhibited some dimension of those two dynamics without exception.
Absolutely. And great point, Doug, because let's face it, it's part of most societal programming still. It's changing slowly. And the people that you're talking about would have been in this, you know, of a generation who are programmed still that the men are supposed to be the primary breadwinners, if not the only, right? We went from the only breadwinner, say back in the 40s and 50s and before, to the primary one. Like, it was your career, my job, right? In other words, and so men's identities have been programmed to be wrapped up as much in career building as women are programmed as being mothers. Like, there are so many women who unfortunately are infertile, and for whatever reason. And part of the emotional pain of it is, I'm never going to be a mom. In other words, again, who am I if I'm not a mom? Right. So, and that's perhaps why the women have a different fear. They still feel the need to protect their family, right? Mama bear. And at the same time, their identity is wrapped up in something else rather than the career. So, and the primary one for the men may have been the identity. I don't doubt it for a second, because that truly is the strongest fear. And that's a lovely example. And underneath it is still the layers of, how am I going to support my family? Mm-hmm. How am I, right? That fear of destitution. that fear of rejection. If I'm not the primary breadwinner, if I'm not the almighty leader that I have been working so hard to be, you know, is everyone going to leave me? Again, it's not logical,
yeah.
Right? Your wife could say that, you know, honey, I love you, and no matter what, and I know this isn't your fault. The reality is the unconscious mind is going, I'm going to be rejected. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be all alone.
Yeah. Right. Irene, this has been phenomenal, and I really appreciate your insights and sharing here. We're kind of coming up on time here. I'm going to ask you a daunting question to close out here. If anyone's been listening and they've heard one of these descriptions and said, you know, I think that's me. I think I have that going on. Is there a good, reliable first step that somebody ought to search for if they want to overcome these things?
Great question. And it's not a daunting question. I love the question. It's, I always say 80% of the battle and solution is awareness. And so what I recommend to your listeners is to start asking the questions, right? I mean, that's how I did it with my client today. You know, it was her first time with me. It's like, I just asked question after question after question after question after question. Right? So somebody can do that for themselves as well. And it's to uncover the root. Because what you think, just as what she thought was the problem, was not really the problem, right? It's like, okay, drilling down, drilling down, drilling down. So I'm a big fan of journaling. Journaling, I keep, I don't know if this is going to be a thing, but I keep an artist pad by my bed, mm-hmm. and a pencil. And I write a question like every night, where you can do this in a session, a journaling session.
I've got there a
you
similar.
Go. You got yours too? Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
And then if you're going to do it before bed, leave it beside your bed. And first thing in the morning, before you, like, you can almost do it with your eyes closed. I have. That's why I use an artist pad, because I can draw like everywhere on it, like right and crisscross and stuff. But before you check emails, Instagram, before you even set a foot out of the bed, just allow whatever thoughts come to you. So you ask the question the night before, what's blocking me? And you can even be more specific and say, what fear is blocking me from being, doing, or having what I want? And you may even find that you have nightmares. In other words, it gets your unconscious mind, like, in other words, it's allowing the answers to come out that have been submerged, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And it may come out as nightmares or dreams. And again, just first thing you do is when you wake up, whatever thoughts pop into your mind, whatever memories of a dream, write them down. And do it with a state of curiosity rather than judgment. And just go, oh, that's interesting. I wonder what, you know, what that's all about, or what's at the root of that. And it may take a while if you're doing it by yourself, because your unconscious mind may not feel safe enough to let it out, right? There's, right, you know, right. We're really great about not remembering or tamping down things that your unconscious mind feels may not be safe for you,
right,
or others. Right. And then I personally recommend drawing, like, pretending that you have a reality TV screen that's outside of you, and that you're watching your life on that reality TV. I promise it'll be better than any soap opera, right?
Yeah.
And just put whatever emotions or whatever is you're feeling out there. And just, again, with curiosity, go, oh, there's fear. That's interesting. Oh, there's jealousy. I don't know where that came from. Again, not judgment. But when you put it out there and take it out of I am feeling, right? I am is identity. Remember what we just talked about with the identity, right? So if somebody says, I am depressed, I am anxious, that's a permanent state, right? Versus, I love how the French say, j'ai faim, j'ai froid. You know, in other words, I have hunger, I have cold, right? So that's one step that's better. The best step is to put it right outside of yourself and go, oh, there's fear. And it feels like that, like clenching of the stomach or tightness in the chest.
Yeah.
Or I can't swallow. And then it takes the sting out of it and it allows you to just observe it so that it no longer controls you. Because as long as it's inside here, it controls you and it's thinking you, it's feeling you. That to me, those are the first two steps that I recommend to everyone.
That's great. That's great. Well, tell everyone how they could get a hold of you if they are interested in following up.
I'd love to. I am on LinkedIn, Dr. Irene Kopp. Our business page is the Stress to Success Shift Institute. And my website is drirenekopp.com, drirenekopp.com.
That's great. That's great. Well, folks, if you're listening on audio, we'll have all that in the show notes that you can refer to if you didn't catch that. And I do want to remind everyone, we do have the video version of this over on my YouTube channel by the same name, Leadership Powered by Common Sense. So again, Irene, thank you so much for sharing. I think this is powerful. I certainly hope our listeners will take this to heart. And if you are feeling that blockage of some sort that's holding you back from that ultimate opportunity that might be out there, think about some of the words that have been shared here. Hit the replay button or rewind and take another look at it. So again, one last time, Irene, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure, Doug.
Well, folks, this has been another episode of Leadership Powered by Common Sense. We really thank you for listening. And if you are looking at YouTube, don't forget to subscribe. You'll get updates and notices about new and upcoming episodes that we've got out there. So thank you again. We'll see you again soon. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Leadership Powered by Common Sense, hosted by Doug Thorpe. If you would like to know more about the coaching and advisory services he provides, visit DougThorpe.com.